This is Jane Latour on July 7th, 2005, interviewing Laura Kelber, formerly of Local 3, International Brotherhood of Electrical Workers. So, Laura, what year were you born?
I was born in 1957 in Brooklyn.
Okay. Now, would you speak louder, please, because we have this faulty equipment, faulty towers. So, you were born in Brooklyn, and what did your parents do for work?
Well, at the time I was born, my father was working on the swing shift. He was a linotype operator, a defunct job now, at the New York Post. And my mother worked part-time as an editor for medical publications. And, actually they were in these jobs because they had both been labor journalists, left-wing labor journalists. And this, was like right at, during the tail end, of the McCarthy era. And they had both lost their jobs at that point.
Wow. So you grew up with... they were members of unions, or they were at least union conscious?
My father was in typographer's union. And my mother, was not in union, but, they had been both labor journalists. My father had been a labor activist since the 1930s, still is, at the age of 91.
He's 91, too. Yeah. Tell me about your education.
I went to Yale, and I majored in philosophy.
Okay, so that's good preparation.
What else was it going to be? Be a construction worker,
So what year did you graduate from
Yale? I graduated in 79.
Okay.
And I was very, painfully shy, and job interviews didn't come easily to me.
I have a special question I'm going to slip in here at the request of a friend of mine who I was bragging about you to. And he was interested in what philosophy did you study? What were you interested in philosophy?
Well, there was this, now discredited German philosopher whose name begins with M, been a little discredited last part of the century. Mm-hmm. But, Marxism, and political philosophy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, which they used to teach. did you have any jobs prior to Local 3?
A friend of my mother's got me into some medical rewrite.
Oh, yeah.
See, a lot of the lefties, when they lost their jobs, they went into medical writing. Mm. Still a hotbed of lefties.
That's so interesting.
I would rewrite doctor's papers into little news articles. Mm-hmm. And then I did office temp work.
Mm-hmm. Wow. So that's a big switch.
Yeah.
So what was your motivation and circumstances for entering Local 3? How did that come about?
I don't remember what got the idea into my head. I was thinking that maybe I should try to become a railway conductor, because then I could travel around. Mm. And my mother had a friend, Joyce Hartwell, worked at Allcraft. And she asked Joyce about how I would get into a non-traditional job like that. She said she didn't know, but she invited me to join the Allcraft program, which was to train women to get into construction.
Mm-hmm. Oh, okay.
So that's what I did, and that's how I got...
Okay, so how long did that program last?
I don't remember. It was maybe 6 to 8 weeks.
Mm-hmm. And it was down on St. Mark's Place,
right,
then?
In this great building.
Yeah, was it male and female?
Just females.
Just females. And so did you learn a lot? Did you like it?
Well, it was an introduction
to
electrical, plumbing, carpentry, and cabinet making. Just, basic introduction. But then they helped us apply to jobs, and I actually applied to the cement mason's apprentice, and I got in, and I actually, that was my first job in the trades.
Oh my God.
But
what was that like?
Well, it was just working on the street out in Jamaica,
mm-hmm.
Queens.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they were redoing the little islands in the middle
oh, yeah.
of the street, so it was an easy enough.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, it wasn't heavy duty
mm-hmm.
you know, on a construction yeah. site at that point.
Mm-hmm. So how long did you do that?
Probably just for about a week or not a month or two.
Mm-hmm.
I don't remember. Yeah. During the summer,
uh-huh.
I got an incredible tan. You
know, I'll bet.
People said, "Where'd you get the tan?" I said, "Jamaica." You
know. That's funny. And so now, Ed Allcraft, was Joyce Hartwell the instructor, or did she have other instructors?
She had other instructors,
mm-hmm.
but you know, it was her organization,
yeah.
and it was really a great idea. She really got a lot of women into trades.
Yeah, she did.
You know, single-handedly.
Mm-hmm. So then how did it come that you applied to Local 3?
Well, I guess electrical seemed the most interesting,
mm-hmm.
and then at that point, my father was good friends with Harry Van Arsdale.
Oh.
And let's see, he, you know, so he knew a lot of people at Local 3, and he asked if I wanted to put in, you know, to put any words in for me,
mm-hmm.
but, you know, I didn't want, you know, I wanted to just apply with, you know, the other
yeah.
women.
Right.
So, you know, I went through the application
mm-hmm.
process of, you know, you had to wait online
mm-hmm.
for a couple of days. Yeah.
And who was with you that we would both know, recognize? Young men.
Boys, men.
Yeah. Boymen.
You know, it was okay.
Uh-huh. Yeah. And so then you had to go through the process of being interviewed and tested and all of that?
Yeah,
mm-hmm.
and I waited online, I guess, in the summer of 80, and I got called into the apprenticeship. I started the school before I started work, actually, in,
mm-hmm.
I guess, February of 81,
okay.
and I started work in March.
And so now how did you feel about the quality of the training in the apprenticeship program?
Well, you know, it was like sort of a high school level thing, and
mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, because I was the only girl in my class,
mm-hmm.
woman in my class, like
mm-hmm.
most of the women were, you know,
mm-hmm.
you know, the only ones in their class. And you know, I quickly met the other women in the bathroom. That's where we hung out.
Yeah.
And that's where I met Cynthia.
Uh-huh. That's where I met Cynthia. So, do you want to talk about some of your work experiences going to work?
I have so many. I don't really know where to begin. I mean, I had some very good experiences
mm-hmm.
and some really horrible experiences.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know.
Well, maybe we'll save the work experiences for talking about the child pregnancy.
No, that was, I wouldn't really, yeah. I mean, I wouldn't say my most memorable experiences
yeah.
necessarily had to do with that.
Yeah.
That was not.
Yeah, so what were some of the memorable experiences? Give me a couple of good examples and give me a couple of, like, negative experiences. One thing that interests me is just the whole idea of showing up for your first day at work in March 81. I mean, do you remember what your first job was?
Yes, it was the first three buildings going up at Battery Park City, Gateway Plaza,
mm-hmm.
the apartment buildings. And I didn't know what to expect. I thought, you know, could they rape and murder me?
Mm-hmm.
I had absolutely no conception
mm-hmm.
of what it was going to be like. And it was a huge construction site.
Mm-hmm.
and you know, I showed up at the front gate, and I had the, on the little slip the name of the company I was supposed to report to. So I asked some guy at the gate, you know, and he kind of leered at me, and he said, "I'll drive you over there." It was a huge, muddy site. And so they took me to the trailer. It was a company, National States. And there were, actually were some other women working there, including Evan and Bruni.
Is that where you met Evan?
Yes.
And Bruni?
And, you know, the foreman was like, you know, talking to some other guy, and well, where should we put the girl, you know. So they said, I'll put her in the mill, which was, they had a huge shed where they prefabbed all the pipe that was going to be then put in on the decks of the buildings that were being, you know, three buildings were going up at once. So there was a huge amount of pipe that had to be cut to certain lengths, you know, prefabbed. And that's what they did it in the mill. So it was like a little factory almost. So I walked into the mill, and the head guy there came right up to me. And the first thing he said to me was, "Are you Jewish?" So I said, "Yeah." And he pointed to a sign and said, "Jewish Mill." He said, "We're all Jewish here. They put all the Jews here."
Oh my God.
There was one black guy working, and I kind of looked over at him. He pulled out a little Star of David he had hanging around his head. But,
Interesting.
Yeah, well, there was a lot of heavy, you know, ethnic racism as well. It was, you know, on any job, they wanted to know your last name.
Right.
You know, figure out, you know, who you were. And a lot of jobs were very segregated, you know.
The Italians,
you know, blacks,
together.
Yeah. Black, Hispanic, Italian, Irish, Jewish. And the work was, you know, divvied out accordingly. You had the blacks in the boiler room. You know, you had the Jews doing the sort of nitpicking little leftover stuff, maybe. And the Irish got the fire alarm system, which was the high prestige, you know.
So then how did they respond to you? Okay, and
No, they were sexist and making constantly making comments.
What's a nice girl like you doing?
No, like, oh, I'm getting out of shape. I should do some push-ups. Hey, Laura, get underneath me. That'll help.
So tell me about a couple of other memorable experiences. I mean, did you have some people who really went out of their way to help you teach?
Yeah, I mean, I had, there were a couple of guys in particular who I have very fond memories of working with. You know, one of them was this guy, John, who, you know, he and I worked together, it seemed like, you know, maybe half a year, you know, just, you know, going from job to job. And, you know, he taught me an awful lot.
He was a journeyman.
Yeah.
So you were his apprentice?
Yeah.
Yeah. How was it with Bruni and Evan? You know, you were in the shanty. I actually have a photo of the three of you together in the shanty. Reading the newspaper. And, I mean, how did you, were you able to give each other much support, or what was, I mean, you were working all over this big site, right?
So. Yeah, like, the reality was that it wasn't always very easy to work with other women. And, you know, the support, I was surprised sometimes at the lack of support. I mean, it varied from person to person.
Yeah.
But, you know, not all the women were feminists. And, you know, they're also, I mean, I think the men probably played women off against each other, too. So, you know, I had good experiences working with other women where we really supported each other, and then bad experiences where they were hostile. Or, you know, so it was a mixed bag. I mean, throughout my career.
Now, speaking of the women, you participated in organizing with the women's, what would we call it, a caucus, the women electricians, that group, and were you in on the early stages of deciding that that was important to do?
Well, when I came in 81, mm-hmm. and I guess the first women came in 78. So
yeah.
they, you know, there was just a small group of mm-hmm. them, you know, yeah. Cynthia, you know, Beth,
Melinda,
Jackie, and, you know, and Evan, and who came in. And then I think my group was like probably the largest group of women. I think
Which
when I came in, it may have been over the course of a year as many as 30.
Wow.
I'm not sure that, but
yeah.
it was a huge
yeah. mm-hmm.
difference. But they all knew each other, you know,
mm-hmm.
and, but there weren't that many of them.
Right.
But they, I first went to a meeting that, you know, I mean, Cynthia said, we're having a meeting, you know, so you should come to it.
Mm-hmm.
But I guess Cynthia and I really, you know, hit it off, became very, you know, good friends.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, we both were really into organizing and talking that. So really
mm-hmm.
we sort of then took over
yeah.
together
mm-hmm.
and, you know, really pushed the organizing and, you know, meeting women, signing them up, getting their addresses, and doing mailings
mm-hmm.
and figuring out what we should do at meetings.
Yeah. So now with your class, were you able to get a lot of participation from the women, or how did that work out?
Well, it was a very, you know, mixed, you know, difficult group of women, you know.
Yeah.
It's not like walking into the sunset where everyone bonds and, you
yeah,
know.
Yeah, right.
Cranky.
Oh, we're tradeswomen.
Yeah, it was a cranky bunch. Like I said, not all were feminists.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of them were gay, and a lot of them were, you know, wildly homophobic.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
And it was an extremely mixed race group.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, there were personalities there.
Right.
There were women who kind of sort of prostituted themselves on the job. You know,
mm-hmm.
you have a
yeah,
huge range
there. Yeah.
But women, you know, it's they were having a tough time on the job. That's when they tended to come to meetings
mm-hmm.
for support, and so we tried to be there, you know.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and sometimes, you know, it worked out well. Sometimes they were just angry and wanted to vent. But, you know, we really tried to just at least keep in touch with most of the women. And, you know, I really think, and because of this group, you know, the women did help women meet each other,
mm-hmm.
and, you know, they
yeah.
did have somewhere to go.
One of the problems that women organizing in the trades oftentimes have is that they have no way to get in touch with each other, and the union doesn't facilitate that.
Yeah, I mean, we didn't get any help.
Yeah.
Actually, early on, Harry Van Arsdale did meet with us. We always
mm-hmm.
tried to sort of keep, you know, quasi-cordial relations.
Mm-hmm.
I mean,
yeah.
Harry met early on with some of the women, and I know we had some, Cynthia and I had a letter-writing campaign just about a union issue,
mm-hmm.
and, you know, about like some legislation that the union was interested in, so we sent a letter, you know, supporting the legislation
mm-hmm.
to a newspaper or something. And Harry Van Arsdale actually called me at home, you know, my room, and some weird guy is trying to reach you. He's, I don't know, kind of creepy. It was Harry Van Arsdale
mm-hmm.
calling me home. He called me finally at 6 in the morning to catch me before I went out to work.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, you know, well, I have this letter here from this group calling themselves Women Electricians.
Mm-hmm.
Well, it's very good that you're interested in supporting the labor organization, but can I suggest that you, you know, stop worrying about this and just concentrate on learning the trade? So, you know, so that was his thing. But, you know, his son Tommy, of course, was always pretty bad towards us.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know,
what was
kind of across the board bad with everyone
mm-hmm.
and
yeah.
every issue.
Right, yeah.
Frankly, you know.
Yeah, not like father and not like
no.
son.
Yeah.
I mean, well, tell me about some of the issues that you all addressed that you had some successes with.
I don't know if we had success ever.
Was pornography an issue?
It was a huge issue because, you know, it's not like, you know, there was some pornography on the wall and you were like, oh, I can't, you know, I'm offended. But they tended to use it very aggressively, like make a point of, you know, putting it like on your coat, taping it onto your coat, you know, like when you have your coat, you know, really. You
as
know, like
a weapon to, yeah, to sort like of you, tell you're not welcome here,
yeah,
you're
walk
in our territory.
You walk in the locker and the guys start loudly reading out loud from a porno magazine, mm-hmm. or, you know, stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So, it was an issue that we wanted it, you know, off the job.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, we wrote a letter to Tommy about that, and, you know, he actually answered us,
mm-hmm.
and said...
in written form?
In written mm-hmm. form, and said that this is a personal matter for the membership, and he can't interfere in the personal mm-hmm. lives of the membership.
Well, I heard him testify at the hearings, Commission on Human Rights, and he said it's just part of the job, and, you know, if you don't like it, don't work there, because... That's
yeah.
what men do. You know, urinate in public
and
blah,
you know,
blah.
Yeah, and we, you know, I mean, there's the whole concept of a hostile work environment,
mm-hmm.
and clearly
something
that's what
that
it created.
Him,
and
right.
yeah, and that is a, you know, part of the definition of
mm-hmm.
sexual harassment.
Mm-hmm. So, but did you ever get any remedy from Local 3 on the those issues related to the hostile work environment for women? Did they start responding?
No,
mm-hmm.
not really. But you know, having the language down, knowing that you know you had, you know, I mean, we wrote stuff up for the women about what to do,
mm-hmm.
and that you have a right to, you know, pornography-free environment
mm-hmm.
and a harassment-free environment. So. I mean, I know it certainly emboldened me to know, you know, like, I'm working with these guys and I can say, this is legally, it's against the law,
mm-hmm.
you know.
Yeah.
And, you know, sometimes you just have to tear the stuff down yourself.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I once made a big deal on a job where there was, you know, some calendar in the GC's office, and I had to be in there, because
mm-hmm.
that's where the drinking water was,
oh, yeah.
and, you know, where the bathroom was.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, look, this is offensive to me, can you take it off? These were guys sort of sitting in suits in the
yeah,
GC's
right.
office, and they were, well, you know, they made a big deal of just like putting a little piece of paper over the
yeah,
woman's
right.
breasts
yeah,
or
right.
something.
Yeah.
So, you know, they're like, well, I'm sorry, and I'm not just sure we can do, you know. So finally I just walked over and ripped it off
yeah.
the wall and
mm-hmm.
tore it up and threw it in garbage, and then, you know, and
yeah.
okay, now it's down,
mm-hmm.
you know, and that's
yeah.
what you had to do.
Yeah. So was there any retaliation against you in the sense of, I'm writing about one woman at the Board of Ed who had a campaign against pornography, and she was a supervisor, she was a foreman, foreman,
mm-hmm.
but, you know, they really came after her because they were so, they took such offense, but just sort of they would accept it if you took action. And
well, I mean, it you had to know who was on the job. If
right.
you were
yeah.
genuine, you know, generally well-liked on the
mm-hmm.
job, then you could do more.
Mm-hmm.
If you're on a job where everyone hated you and was hostile,
mm-hmm.
that was not the time to do anything.
Right, yeah. So,
you
were
in
both situations.
You had to
yeah.
do it on a case-by-case
mm-hmm. yeah.
situation.
What would you say were some of the obstacles to the organizing you were doing within Local 3 for the women? Or
well,
the shortcomings?
I mean, the fact that, you know, first of all, the union didn't help us,
mm-hmm.
and that we were all spread out
mm-hmm.
all over the place. We didn't work together, you know, so there was no place where the women were all going to really run into each other, maybe
mm-hmm.
at a union meeting.
Mm-hmm. And you went to the union meetings?
Yeah, well, yeah, I mean,
yeah.
the apprentice meetings.
Right.
And, you know, in apprentice school, there were two different, you know, there were Tuesday, Thursdays, and Monday, Wednesday, so not even all the women would run into each other
yeah,
there.
Yeah.
So, you know, getting a mailing list was really crucial.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, so there were the logistics, and there was the fact there just weren't that many of us.
Right.
And so when there's not that many, then organizing becomes knowing who this person is and what it takes to get her to the meeting. You know, does she want free sandwiches? Does she want child care? I got into a thing once where I thought we should like organize something to go out to Chippendales, hoot at the men. And because I thought that would attract a lot of the sort of the party girl types who we were having trouble getting. And then a lot of the gay women were really mad at me, furious, that we're not going to do that. And so it was very hard to get all of this, get everyone on the same page. And we never, I still think we did a lot in terms of collecting, lots of personalities at one time or another.
Mm-hmm.
They were aware of us and aware of each other. So that was the good part.
Some of the things that come up are that, racism and homophobia did the group try to deal with issues of racism, homophobia, or just by trying to appeal to the particular personalities and their issues?
I remember once, like, one of the women, was talking about homophobia, and, like, then this other woman in the room said, "Are there gay people in this group?" I think it was pretty impossible in the thing to have any serious discussions about that because, the purpose was just to sort of be a clearinghouse for women to deal with stuff on their jobs, and we weren't going to make the women like each other be pals with each other. I think it would have been really more destructive than anything.
Did you do any work with United Trades Women?
We might have had some joint events or something. But
you weren't a big activist with them.
No, when there was a, they had some conferences that I went to and stuff, it was good to meet women from other places and stuff.
They did a lot of activities, Now let's switch to the subject of pregnancy and motherhood, because what year did you have your first child?
88, March of 88, and I worked, till I was, I think, my 6 month of pregnancy, and there was a day when I just realized I couldn't bend down anymore. So I went out on disability and it went fine.
Mm-hmm.
On the job, I didn't really talk about being pregnant, but I remember this one guy coming up to me and saying, it's winter now, and sometimes in the winter, people start eating a lot, and then, suddenly it's bathing suit season, and then they start regretting it. So I said, "I'm pregnant." And he said, "Oh, my God, I had no idea," But then there was a weird situation. I got sent to this job, and, I was now maybe 5 months pregnant, I assumed... by then it was out that I was pregnant, and I assumed that the foreman knew I was pregnant. Mm-hmm. And, when I showed up there, I was the only woman, and he said, "Well, I'm not going to give you any special treatment or anything. I expect you to work just like the men." Mm-hmm. So I said, "Well, obviously if there's any real heavy lifting and all, I'm not going to do that." So he didn't know I was pregnant. He was just talking to me like I was a girl, and and I assumed he knew. So I was saying, "Oh, here," I walked and said, "Oh, I'm not going to do heavy lifting." So he was actually amazed when I told him. I don't know. I guess they thought it was like a beer belly I had.
Like theirs.
Right. But he had no idea. And then I was embarrassed when I realized that the things that I'd been saying that he, reinforcing all his ideas about women.
So the first pregnancy went well, and that was Alex, right?
Right.
Your son.
My sullen teenage son.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And now how many kids do you have?
I have three.
You have three.
And in between I had two miscarriages. Mm-hmm. And, you know, of course there's no way to know whether they were work-related mm-hmm. or not. But, I mean, certainly, you know, emotionally at the time I felt they were.
And you had a lot of, you did try to bring some actions. You had some case with the State Division of Human Rights. And you wrote to the union. Did you pursue any legal...
Yes.
Yeah, you want to talk about that?
Well, you see, my second pregnancy, I was working in an indoor location at the World Financial Center. And, you know, very kind of clean, light, mm-hmm. easy job when I became pregnant. And they knew I was pregnant.
Okay, so you were talking about, you were at the World Financial Center.
Right.
Continue.
So, anyway, it would have been a good job to be pregnant on mm-hmm. because there was no heavy lifting. Mm-hmm. It was indoors in an occupied building with mm-hmm. clean bathrooms. And when I told them I was pregnant, very soon after they sent me to a construction job.
And how long had you been on that job?
I don't remember offhand,
okay.
a few months. But, you know, it was a surprise.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't like,
yeah.
you know, layoffs,
right.
you know, transfers
yeah.
were coming up.
Mm-hmm.
And
so it wasn't just a reduction in force?
No. They,
okay.
yeah.
yeah.
And, you know, I was sent to this, you know, freezing cold job close to here, North Moore Street.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, there was some heavy lifting, you know, there were no clean bathrooms, mm-hmm. it was the worst type of job. Mm-hmm. And I was going to stick it out as long as I could,
mm-hmm.
because if you left too early, you only got 26 weeks of disability,
mm-hmm.
so you had to at least, you know, stick it, in, you know, out to
mm-hmm.
a certain...
Yeah.
So, I mean, I was near the end of my third month, and I had a miscarriage.
Mm.
And I took it very hard, you know,
mm.
that, you know, because of, you know, there's nearly never any way you can,
yeah.
you know,
right.
be sure. But, I mean,
mm-hmm.
emotionally, at the time, that's how I felt. And it changed, you know, but I'd been complacent during my first pregnancy
mm-hmm.
that, you know, you work and,
have
you,
to
you
do.
Know, you
yeah.
know. And so then when I got pregnant for the third time, you know, my first thought was, well, I want to be put on a light-duty
mm-hmm.
job. I don't
yeah.
want to be on a, you know,
mm-hmm.
hard job.
And I know I've been reading through your papers. I mean, it was common practice to put men who had some kind of problem on light-duty with different contractors.
In fact, I had been, you know, when I was, before I was transferred to that construction job, they... In the interim, they had put me on another indoor occupied, you know, light
mm-hmm.
job. And on that job was a guy who had multiple sclerosis.
Mm-hmm.
He could only sit.
Mm-hmm.
He could barely work.
Mm-hmm.
And the foreman kept putting his arm around him saying, I'm going to take care of you,
mm-hmm.
don't worry.
Yeah.
And then they took me from that job and put me, you know, pregnant and put me on the construction job. So that, you know,
yeah.
particular...
underscored.
And that was for Forest Electric.
Mm-hmm. Which is a big company.
Yeah, and so I did, I sued them.
Mm-hmm.
And it ended up with just a sort of settlement. They were going to, you know, give me a little money, but I said what I wanted was a pregnancy clause
mm-hmm.
saying that pregnant, you know, a
mm-hmm.
commitment from that pregnant women are entitled to be on light-duty
mm-hmm.
jobs.
So did you get that?
Yeah, part of the settlement they wanted was that I would never work for them again, and I
mm-hmm.
said, no, I didn't want to do that.
Mm-hmm.
They said they would pay me more if I said I would
mm-hmm.
never, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But, I mean, of course, I'm sure they just told the union anyway, never send her those again
right.
anyway.
Yeah.
But I didn't agree to it,
yeah.
you know.
And so they did implement a clause?
Yes, somewhere, but you know whether that helped other women or not. I never really found out. You know what the experiences were after me. But anyway, when I became pregnant again with my daughter, I was working for another company. Escapes me at the moment the name. Written down at home, but again, I told them I was pregnant. They immediately, what did they do? They fired me that same day. Mm. And so I went to the union and I said, look, I got fired from being pregnant. Mm. I want to be put on a light duty job. And then I went through this whole thing where they sent me to the Coney Island train yards, this live track, it's heavy work. And, the foreman there said, McCormick, the employment director, must have it in for you if he sent you here. Mm-hmm. There's no place.
The union sent you.
Yeah. I mean, it's the joint board, but it's, the union.
Yeah.
So I went in and I talked to Joe Bechtold at the union. He was, I don't remember what his position was, he was sort of an up-and-coming guy. And he said, well, look, if you want to be put on a light duty job, you have to say that you don't want light duty. That's the only way, and he gave me a run around. And he ended up saying, so if you can have a boy or girl, if you have a boy, he could become an electrician.
And so if you have a girl, she can become an electrician.
No, but obviously right, no. That's not, and I,
yeah, right.
But there basically I ended up getting sent out, and I lost my medical benefits.
Oh,
because you had to have, that was the loophole, that you had to have worked 6 months straight to keep your medical benefits. So that's why there was that area where did you have to make it till your 6 months. Right. It wasn't just a disability.
Right.
It was like a little loophole, and that's what I also wanted clarification.
Mm-hmm.
If you go out at 3 months, can you, what happens to your benefits?
Mm-hmm.
And, I would, went back and forth trying to get clarification, and they said, no, you lose them, and,
So you were unemployed until your daughter was born?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So I then had a lawsuit against the Joint Industry Board for pregnancy discrimination.
Mm-hmm.
And my husband is a lawyer, so his boss gave him permission to work on it pro bono, and he thought it best to have another lawyer. It went to court.
Mm-hmm.
We went to court, and it was in Long Island. The federal district covers Brooklyn, Queens, and Long Island.
Mm-hmm.
We had to go to Long Island every day for this trial, which lasted about a week, and jury trial. And I still think that somehow the locals, we fixed the venue, because discrimination in Brooklyn and discrimination in Long Island is different.
Mm-hmm.
And we lost the trial. It was horrific. It was hard, it was horrible. And the union's lawyer was this, nasty schmuck. It was a horrible, horrible experience. But then my husband appealed it and we won.
Oh.
Because
on what grounds?
The judge said that Tommy Van Arsdale did not have to testify.
Mm-hmm.
That it was, what had happened had nothing to do with him.
Mm-hmm.
My husband got it overturned on the basis that it was relevant, and this decision was actually featured on the front page of the New York Law Journal, because it was a big deal, and a civil rights activist lawyer called us up and said, that's a great decision, because you're holding, the head person liable for, and it really, it was a great victory.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, it didn't involve a jury, but
mm-hmm.
involved, legal
action.
And so then they ended up, so we were going to have a new trial where Tommy would have to testify, and then the union settled with us.
And what did you get?
Barely enough to really cover the legal expenses, but it was still a victory.
I mean
it wasn't, and I also, we asked for the language again as part of the settlement, and they didn't want to do that, but we had, so somewhere, I don't even remember where, there may be language saying women are entitled to light duty, but you know, the unfortunately, I don't know what happened to women after that.
You know, I saw a beautiful letter you wrote to Thomas Van Arsdale, laying out all the issues for women, pregnant women, and, you know, and then you did a summation at the end. I have a copy of that, and I was wondering if they ever responded to that.
I don't, you know, I know I have that at home somewhere. I don't remember. I have to see if I have a response.
Because it was, and you also volunteered to take all the information and put it together into a brochure. Did that ever happen?
No. I mean, not, not from them. I mean, we tried to write this stuff up. I did most of the writing, you know, distributed to.
So you do have a brochure that you put together for the women?
You know, we have, I have to go through all my papers. Right. We had fact sheets.
Good, well. Okay, so let's talk about the responsibility of the contractors. I mean, what do you think is the responsibility of the contractor to deal with these issues? The union is being, you know.
I mean, I think, well, remember, it's a joint industry, so they, in theory, they sit down together and work out the conditions. I mean, my suit was not against the union, it was against the Joint Industry Board, which, you know, Tommy was the head of, but it, you know, it includes employers and the union. And, I mean, I, like I said, I did sue the individual employer because they made the, you know, once you're working for a contractor, you know, they're in charge and they can decide what they want to do with you. So they are liable. But, you know, when it was a matter of the hiring hall, then, you know, that was, you know, not sending me to an appropriate job, you know, then, you know, they were liable there. But they're all, they all have a responsibility, or should, you know.
You made the point, one point you made in your letter to Van Arsdale was that you were a journeywoman, and you could only imagine what it would be like for an apprentice. I mean, that's a whole other issue of pregnant apprentices.
And yeah, and apprentices also have to go to apprentice school in the evening. So it, I think, I mean, I became a mother, you know, after the apprenticeship, but I think it'd be very, it's very difficult, you know, for like, you know, some of the young women who were mothers when they were in the apprenticeship. And I think, you know, a lot of them probably got weeded out. This, you know, just lack of personal support in their lives. And,
Let's talk a bit about childcare. What were the childcare issues like for you and your family during
this time? I don't think it was any different than any working woman because...
But yeah, one thing is that tradeswomen have to be on the job a lot of... Well, not all women. We have a lot of members who have to be in the hospitals at 7 a.m.
I don't think it was dramatically different from the issues other working women have.
But still, childcare...
I mean, in a certain way, I mean, you know, like say for a professional woman who has to be at work, I mean, you know, you're a schlurb on the job and you say, I have to leave early because my kid is sick, you know, usually they're going to say, oh, whatever you can afford, we'll dock you. But, you know, and also getting out earlier in the day was very helpful rather than getting home at 7 at night. So, I mean, you know, it's a mixed bag and I don't necessarily think tradeswomen have it worse than other women.
But women still have it rough. I mean, families, because it is a family issue, but women usually get, you know, charged with it. And what kind of child care arrangements did you make for working and having kids? How did you...
Well, what I did was I stayed home, you know, unpaid. I wrote, you know, after my first son was born, I wrote a letter saying that I was going to take a leave of approximately, you know, 6 to 8 months until he was weaned. And I just, so I just, I didn't ask, I just said this. And then when I came back, there were no problems there. Because I'm sure they didn't know what you have to say anyway, you know. But, so I was home for those, you know, first months. And, then I found a daycare center that took him, you know, at that young age, that, you know, took infants.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I had a combination of, you know, daycare programs and babysitters, you know,
mm-hmm.
and, you know, I mean, I wasn't a single mother. I had a working husband,
right.
who, so that, you know, I was mm-hmm. able to do that. So I had it, you know, easier than, you know, a lot of women
mm-hmm.
have it, you know, particularly single mothers.
Right. What about sources of support for you? Well, your husband, obviously, but. And you have a family around here, so
yeah, my parents were very supportive.
Mm-hmm.
You know, also, you know, my friends within, you know, that I made within the business were
mm-hmm.
supportive too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Were there other women in Local 3 that were having kids and that you were familiar with the issues? I mean, you talked about. Sort of trying to systematize the information and the policies.
There were some women who had kids already when they came
mm-hmm.
in. And, you know, I mean, every woman had to have her own support system, a mother or a sister,
mm-hmm.
a husband, you know, who could help.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, like I said, I'm not sure. There were a couple of women who were pregnant and lost their benefits. I think around the time that I was going through this
mm-hmm.
also. So, I mean, it was a real issue.
Yeah. So how long did you work at your trade?
Well, I was in the union, you know, I mean, with time out for,
mm-hmm.
you know, the child, you know, birth
uh-huh.
stuff
yeah.
and layoffs and stuff, but 18 years.
Oh, wow.
And I mean, in fact, I've never formally resigned.
Uh-huh.
I, you know, and I sometimes think I should go back, like,
mm-hmm.
just, I mean, I have a knee injury, but I, you know, I mean, I'm unemployed now,
mm-hmm.
and if there is some big building boom in Brooklyn, you know,
mm-hmm.
pardon, but maybe I should just go in.
If you could find a good contractor to work for
yeah.
or something. Yeah.
But what disturbed me the most about the union, you know, right around the time I left, was that Tommy has really run it into the ground. He's dismantled so many of the things his father did to make it a great
mm-hmm.
union. And what really bothered me, like on one of the last jobs I was on, was that the safety posters on the job were put up by the laborers' union. And the electricians, when I came in, were the leaders of safety. You know, we had
yeah.
all of the safety, we ran the safety show. And we had the leverage to do something, you know,
mm-hmm.
turn off the power
yeah.
if they don't fix it. And suddenly the laborers who were always, you know, the ones who were always
yeah,
getting
the grunts,
hurt,
right.
they're putting up the
mm-hmm.
posters. And that really said something. There have been a lot of bad accidents,
mm-hmm.
too. There had been a spate of some deaths among
mm-hmm.
electricians.
Mm-hmm.
And it just, it disgusted me.
Mm-hmm.
Because if you don't have a good union, you're in trouble, you know, in the construction industry.
Mm-hmm.
It's such a dangerous
mm-hmm.
job, and you know, you need to be able to say no, that's too dangerous,
mm-hmm.
I'm not going to do that unless, you know, it's made safer,
mm-hmm.
and if the union's not going to back you up, you have no rights.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So such a dangerous job, electrician, I mean, potentially. And I was asking Bruni about the whole question of dealing with I don't know, from me outside looking at it, the fear of dealing with major voltage, you know. I mean, was that ever an issue for you?
Yes. I'm a big scaredy cat.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, this guy John I worked with for a long time said, you'll make a fine electrician so long as you get over your fear of heights and electricity, you know. But, you know, I mean, you learn how electricity works,
mm-hmm.
and, you know, I mean, it's, in a way, it's less scary for us than it is for, say, the other trades, who
mm-hmm.
they come into contact with it, but they don't know where it's going to come from,
yeah.
how, you know.
Yeah. Right.
And, you know, so, you know, you learn on the job mm-hmm. how to work with it safely, but, you know, it's still scary.
Mm-hmm. You know, with the women organizing, and you're talking about the changes under Van Arsdale Thomas, were democracy issues within the union ever a real subject of interest for the women getting involved in any? I mean, I realize that union democracy in Local 3 are sort of...
The fact is we were the only active rank and file group in the local.
Is there everything else were
there
like
were
clubs,
official,
right?
clubs. And you know, so they eventually started an official women's club.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that, so, you know, they co-opted some mm-hmm. people to become, you know, they shut us out, you know, and Cynthia, mm-hmm. and people most active, they, you know, and it was just, you know, an empty...
Like a girls' club.
Yeah, I mean, they had a man in charge mm-hmm. of, as their sort of sponsor.
Official sponsor.
You know. Mm-hmm. And, but we were the only rank and file club,
mm-hmm.
you know, that at the time I was in. I mean, you occasionally heard that some of the African Americans had some active club,
mm-hmm.
rank and file club
mm-hmm.
at one point or other. You know, I'm
yeah.
sure there have been attempts to start up clubs. There was, we had an election and there was an opposition slate that a few people put together. But, you know, they were good at, you know, scaring people,
mm-hmm.
you know.
Yeah. So, what would you say were the satisfactions of working as an electrician and working in the trades as a pioneer?
Well, it's a great job.
In
you know,
what
you,
sense?
You're doing something concrete, you can
mm-hmm.
see what you've done. You know, at the end of the day, you turn the switch on and the lights go on. You're doing something that people need, and you know that takes expertise. You know, you can take pride in your work.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean that's the electrical work at its best.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, also when you working, you know, you work alone, you work with a partner, or you work in a crew, and you know, when you get along with the people you work, it's a very good feeling.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I still like to point out, you know, buildings and places I work, and I can see I built that, but I had a little help, you know,
mm-hmm.
but, you know,
yeah.
you know, it at its best, it's a, you know, it gives you an incredible pride, and it can be, it's interesting, and, you know, you're wrapped up in your work, I have to do this, now I have to do this, and
mm-hmm.
it, you know, and electrical, I think, for me, was the best trade because there were some technical aspects to it. I think it was more, you know, there was more to think about,
mm-hmm.
more to learn in terms of, you know, how electricity works. And, you know, I really liked it, and I miss it. I miss it
mm-hmm.
a lot.
Yeah, wow.
But, at the you know, of course, the downside was when everyone was treated like a grunt. You know, if you
mm-hmm.
have a bad foreman,
mm-hmm.
badly... organized job, unsafe,
mm-hmm.
harsh conditions, you know,
yeah.
and then sexism
mm-hmm.
and all that. You know, that was the downside.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But the fact that you moved from job to job was, for me, a plus, because
yeah.
you didn't feel like you were in a rut. It was
yeah.
always something new.
Mm-hmm. So what was your motivation for leaving? I know that you got a master's recently or a while back in public health.
I mean, I guess after the lawsuit, which was, let's see, I guess in 93, I started feeling like there's no future for me here because, you know, I was now, you know,
a troublemaker,
persona non grata. Lawsuit Laura.
Yeah.
I mean, in fact,
did
the
anybody
first
ever call you that? Lawsuit Laura?
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
I had the first job I went to after the lawsuit.
Mm-hmm.
They sent me out to Kennedy Airport, and someone told me that when I walked on the job, a foreman for one of the other companies, and there were several electrical
mm-hmm.
companies working on the job, you know, he ran into the locker and said, "Stay away from her. She's got lawsuits up the yin yang. You know,
mm-hmm.
you say hello to her, she'll sue you." You know,
mm-hmm.
but I remember I was working with this one guy, and you know, I sort of confessed to him that, you know, I actually kind of, before I came here, I had a loss. Guy, he was thrilled that someone had, you know, sued the joint board, even if I lost it, you know.
Wow, that's interesting. Shows you the potential, right? If, so tell me about your assessment of women in Local 3. I mean, you're really removed from it now, so you don't really have a sense of what's happening with the women now. Is that fair to say?
Yeah.
Do you have any information? Or
I talk to some of them sometimes, mm-hmm. but things are really bad. I mean, they're bad for the men now. They're really bad for everyone
mm-hmm.
because of Tommy, because of the economy. There's unemployment, and Tommy has just ripped down the union.
And how has that happened? I mean, in what ways?
In terms of safety,
uh-huh.
in terms of, you know, effing around with people,
uh-huh.
People get sent to a job they have some problem with, and then it's too bad, you know, if you don't like it, we'll keep you unemployed for 6 months.
So people
punishing people with unemployment.
Don't feel that the union standing
and
up
rewarding
for
their friends with overtime.
A lot of that.
Oh, there's a much feeling. I mean, I talked to one guy who's in his 50s. He said he and everyone he knows in his 50s, they're all going for early retirement.
Mm-hmm.
They're so sick of
mm-hmm.
being treated like garbage by the union.
Mm-hmm.
And it's so obviously in that atmosphere, the women are suffering too.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, in terms of bathrooms,
mm-hmm.
it's the whole union's going down. So, you know, it's terrible. It's really terrible that this happened, you know, the wrong person in charge.
Nepotism, you know. What about the subject of affirmative action? This is another thing.
Not
that's
in America.
There's
no affirmative action in America anymore. I mean, there used to be, back in the 80s and stuff,
mm-hmm.
Affirmative action was like a real thing.
Mm-hmm.
It's been, you know, with the Republicans and all,
mm-hmm.
it's been ripped down. I mean, OSHA's been ripped down. EEOC's been ripped down. No one's enforcing this stuff anymore. You know, and
mm-hmm.
I used to feel that, I've considered trying to get a construction management kind of job, like, you know, work
mm-hmm.
as a,
yeah.
you know, project manager
mm-hmm.
or super. And I think back in the 80s, being a woman, you know, they would have realized we need to have
yeah.
some tokens.
Right. Yeah.
No, they don't need tokens anymore.
Right.
I mean, you know.
Mm-hmm. As a pioneer, I mean, as one of the first women who had the courage and the, you know, the guts to do this, how does that make you feel when you look at what's happened to equality for women legally in the United States?
Well, it's lousy, but, you know, these things go in cycles, and, you know, what's happening now is, you know, it'll create the seeds of another wave of
mm-hmm.
people really, you know, demanding rights and getting them, you know.
Mm-hmm.
It's a bad time now, you know, no question.
What do you think is the legacy of the pioneers in Local 3, the women?
I'd like to think that some people gave us credit for what we did, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you know, I think most of us, or some, you know, some of us knew we were there because of the women's movement.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because of the Rosie, the Rivers, and the, you know,
mm-hmm.
during World War II, but, you know, the women's movement
right.
of the 60s and
mm-hmm.
the 70s, we were only there because of them.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I'd like to think that some women will look back on us, you know, and say that we did something for them. You know, a lot of us felt that we didn't, you know, people didn't appreciate what we did.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, I'm sure sometimes, you know, someone might think, oh, the first women who came in were brave,
mm-hmm.
you know.
Could you talk a little bit about your feminist commitment or your how you see feminism in terms of your life?
Well, my mother was, she passed away last year,
oh,
but she was...
I always
an
heard
ardent,
about her.
She was an ardent feminist mm-hmm. theorist. You know, she was an activist.
Mim Kelber, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
And, you know, she worked with Bella Abzug. But, you know, she came up with the idea under Jimmy Carter to
mm-hmm.
organize the first National Women's Conference. She came up with the idea. She
and
set,
did she participate
set it in motion.
In that?
Yeah, she set the whole thing in mm-hmm. motion. She worked to get, you know, everyone out there organizing it, and it was, you know, she never got credit for it.
Mm-hmm.
She was very retiring, you know, mm-hmm. personally, and but she was a tremendous, you know, inspiration,
mm-hmm.
you know, and she always thought in terms of what, you know, I mean, feminism was not about a woman getting ahead or
right.
a woman getting elected.
Mm-hmm.
It was about how is this going to affect women, you know, everything.
Mm-hmm.
How will it affect women? And, you know, so, I mean, it's getting women into these jobs. It's not about tokenism, like, you know, getting a woman foreman, all right, maybe it's good, but, you know, it's just
it's
the
about
critical mass,
the door
you know,
have,
so that
right.
it's not an oddity for
mm-hmm.
women to be in these jobs.
Right.
It's normal, and we haven't achieved that.
Right.
But, you know, I mean... I guess there are other jobs where women have made more inroads, like, you know, say, emergency medical technicians,
mm-hmm.
maybe, you know, there's more women in the police.
Right.
The military, I don't know if that's much of a, a triumph,
right.
but...
And there's 29 female firefighters in New York
yeah.
City. Yep, blue collar's got a long way to go, but...
I mean... You know, because they're good-paying jobs.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if they're, you know, you see women out there, you know, directing traffic because
mm-hmm.
it's a horrible job. You know,
mm-hmm.
there's always room for women in low-paying jobs.
Right.
But so I guess if the construction unions fizzle down enough, it'll become woman-friendly.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they'll pay it.
Do you have siblings?